Good morning and welcome to Mountain Money. It's a beautiful Monday in Park City, and this is Larry Warren along with Doug Wells, kicking off a week of public affairs programming on KPCW, and we're going to start with a topic that you may not know enough about, and if this one hits you in the wallet, maybe not now, but when it's retirement time, you may be surprised to find out how much you spent on fees to get to retirement in your 401ks. So that's what we're going to talk about first, how to grow your savings and stop 401k fees from cheating you out of retirement money. That was the subject and title of an article in Consumer Reports, and we'll talk with the editor of Consumer Reports about that subject.
Larry, then we're going to switch to the other side of it. After you've saved your money, we're going to talk about fun ways to spend your money.
Leisure, yes.
And one of those ways is you've probably seen the Airstream trailers when you've gone to the national parks or on vacation. And right here, we've got Gene Mager, who is the owner of Airstream Restorations, a business, I believe it's in Heber, where he restores the old Airstreams and makes them things that people can go out and enjoy and take on nice vacations.
Oh, I've seen some of them. They're just gorgeous.
Absolutely.
Very, very retro.
They're back in style again. And then we're going to switch gears further and talk about real estate. We've got Jamie Moyle in from Realty Track and Steve Roney from Prudential Real Estate. They've just set up a partnership where Prudential Real Estate here locally is going to be able to offer some of the services of Realty Track. So we're going to be interested to hear about that, particularly if you're interested in buying or selling a home. So it should be a good show. Stay tuned. You're listening to Mountain Money on KPCW, and we'll be back in a minute.
Hi, this is Steve Roney with Prudential Utah Real Estate, a proud supporter of KPCW. With more than 100 sales associates and 14 gallery or ski-in offices in Park City, Prudential Utah can help you with your residential or commercial real estate needs. More information at pru-utah.com or with the Prudential Utah mobile search app.
Hola, soy Jorge, uno de los anfitriones de Cada Domingo. Escuche Cada Domingo en KPCW 91.9 FM. Todos los domingos en las tardes de las 7 a las 10 p.m. Tenemos música, información de la comunidad y perdidos y encontrados. Por favor, denle like o me gusta a la página Facebook de Cada Domingo. Cada domingo, solo en Park City, solo KPCW. Hi, I'm Jorge, one of the hosts for KPCW's Cada Domingo. You can hear Cada Domingo every Sunday evening on KPCW 91.9 FM from 7 to 10 p.m., where you can hear music, community information, and lost and founds. Please like the KPCW Cada Domingo Facebook page. Cada Domingo, only in Park City, only on KPCW.
And welcome back to Mountain Money. And we have on the line with us now Toby Stanger, who's the senior editor of Consumer Reports, to talk about this report from their magazine on how to grow your savings and stop 401k fees from cheating you out of retirement money. Welcome to Mountain Money.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Well, it's our pleasure to have you. And let me, by way of introducing you to us, I'll point out that my partner here, Doug Wells, is a certified financial planner and knows this subject backward and forward. So it should be a fruitful discussion about 401ks and 401k fees and how to maybe minimize them so you have more in retirement. But first, I wanted to start a couple of paragraphs into your article. You just talk about how prepared Americans are to retire, and basically it's a pretty dismal report you have. Let me quote a little bit. In about two-thirds of households with 55 to 64-year-olds, the group closest to retirement age, the average saved for retirement amounts to not even a year's income. That's really appalling and sad and shocking, I would think.
Yeah, it is. Now, a lot of people are expecting to depend heavily on Social Security, and so maybe that accounts for that. But, you know, there's also people, a lot of people who just have not looked at this maybe until they're in their 50s and suddenly wake up and realize that they need to be doing more.
And you point out in your article, it's actually a pretty big number that folks like myself suggest that folks save for retirement. You know, the rule of thumb I use is if you want to replace half of your income with cash flows that are going to come from your investments, and my number is actually a little bit higher than what's in Consumer Reports. You know, I'm closer to 10 to 15 times what you're making. It's actually 12.5%. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, 12.5 times is the rough rule of thumb that I use. And there's some math that goes into it that's a little complex, but you know, that's a big number, and you have to start early, or you have to really start planning on saving a lot later in life.
And
yes.
And the example you use, Toby, is if you earn about $50,000 in adjusted gross income per year, $50,000, you should, in savings to maintain that lifestyle, have 10 times that in savings, or $500,000.
Yeah, and for a lot of people that sounds very daunting. We do give some ideas in Consumer Reports in our September issue about things that people can do. You know, just a little boost in your savings in your 401k, assuming some average growth rates can make a big difference in 10 years. A 57-year-old, we say, who has say a 30. Oh, I'm sorry, I'm getting a little feedback. A 57-year-old who doubles a $3,000 contribution to a 401k to $6,000 could raise his savings from almost $47,000 to $94,000 in 10 years. That's given a growth rate of about 8%. So, again, that's not going to be enough for a lot of people, you know, to cover everything, but it's a start, and it just shows that without a lot of effort, if you can just put a little bit more aside, you can make a big difference.
Right. So, okay, let's talk about the gist of the article about 401k fees. So 401ks have been around for, what, a generation now? So the first people who would have embraced them early are about to retire?
Yes, and, there's been sort of an evolution over time. Much of it is very good. For example, now in many companies, it's the default that you're going to contribute to a 401k, whereas before, you know, you were offered the option and you might have taken it or you might not have taken it. Now, in many cases, you're going to contribute, and in some cases, the contribution will automatically go up every year. So that's one of the developments. But for a lot of people, I'm 55, and for Jeff Gardner, who's one of the subjects of our article, he's 58. He was one of the first people to take advantage of a 401k, and he really lost. He knows he lost out on a lot. He estimates at least $100,000 in fees because he didn't know what he was looking at, or he didn't understand, as many, many people don't understand, what these fees do to your nest egg.
Well, and structurally, the problem is the people that are part of the problem. And Larry, you're right. These are relatively new products, right? They've been around 30 or 40 years. And folks like Consumer Reports are raising consumer awareness to the fee side of it. Part of the problem is systemic. The folks that are making the decision what offerings you have in the 401k, oftentimes that 401k is offered to the company at no out-of-pocket cost to the company. But if the plan sponsors aren't careful, what ends up happening is the way that the big firms make their money is by charging fees for the investments that all of us put our 401ks into. And so you have this disconnect between the decision makers and the people that should be negotiating the lower fees and the people that are paying the fee. Would you agree with that, Toby?
I totally agree with that. And, of course, many employers are small businesses. They may not have an expertise in that. They're depending on the provider to offer guidance, and the provider may not have the best interest of the client in mind. We found a very interesting tool online called BrightScope, one word, BrightScope, where you can look up, there are many, many 401ks. You can look up your 401k and see, what your cost is and how it stacks up against other 401ks in your industry, and get an idea of what you could be
paying in fees, and it could be dramatic. But what's also interesting is even big employers have made some really big mistakes. Walmart, for a long time, had some very costly 401k plans. They had fees that were not the lowest cost. They had investments that were not the lowest cost. They charged high fees because the Walmart people did not do due diligence, according to the lawsuits against them, to find the best plans for their employers. And for a large employer, that is a huge, huge error.
And that's what employees need to understand, is that while they can make choices for their own 401k, they have to make those choices within the funds that are offered. They can't go outside of the plan. So
that's correct.
They're stuck with the employer's picks as to what funds will be offered. So how do employees even know? Is it down in the fine print of a prospectus that everybody gets and nobody reads? Or how do we really know what we're paying to the managers who get our money to manage?
Well, now, in the last couple of years, there is a requirement that you should be receiving at least once a year a disclosure. And it actually comes out in August, September. People should be getting them now. They usually come in the mail. And they will describe what kind of fees you're paying and what it costs you per $1,000 in investment. Then there are also quarterly reports that have other details. So you can get those. If you don't have them, you can ask your employer for them. They're required to give that to you, and you can see what are you paying. And then you may have to do a little research within the plan to see, are there better options that will charge me less within my plan, and choose among them. And we are very high on index funds, which basically follow a market index like the S&P 500. They don't require a lot of management work, because the managers are not choosing the funds actively, and so the costs to run them are very low. And we find time after time, data have pointed out that these index funds often beat actively managed funds with similar goals. And so they are, if they're offered in your plan, they are really a wonderful and useful investment.
And is there, because there are index funds that don't require much in terms of management, because you're just buying the entire index. And then there are funds that are, I don't know, aggressive growth funds where they're looking for small cap funds where investigators for the fund company are out looking, researching on the road, trying to find hidden gems. So I guess there isn't any one standard fee that one should consider acceptable.
Right. We do say, as a general rule, in a large plan that, you shouldn't pay more than 1% of assets toward fees, which in these are called expense ratios. There are some exceptions. There are, for example, international funds that might cost more than that. But in general, 1% is about what you shouldn't go above that. And there are many, many funds that are excellent that charge way below that. For example, the Schwab S&P 500 index has an expense ratio, meaning, the fee, of 0.09%. That means on a $1,000 investment, you'd pay 90 cents. And that's very low. And that's why it's a useful thing. I don't know how you, Doug, how you feel about that, that 1% benchmark.
Yeah, I think it's a good benchmark. And I think there's high level, there's a couple really important pieces to this discussion. Two of which I think we've chatted on. I want to get your thoughts on the third point. The first one is you just have to start saving, right? And the earlier you do that, the better. The more you can put aside, the better. So that's the first point, and you got to start saving. Two is, you know, keep your fees reasonable because they do chip away at the returns, and over 20, 30 years, it can make a big difference. And the third one is, Toby, you mentioned earlier about people making choices within their 401k. And I find that that can have a significant impact on your final results. Toby, you're probably familiar with the Dalbar study that shows the impact of people switching their strategies based on last year was a really good year. Boy, I'm going to go after this hot manager. The manager I was in last year maybe was only, you know, wasn't a top performer, so I'm going to switch. The cost of that switching is staggering. Over the last 20 years, depending on which index you look at, the market's basically been up 8.5%, where the average investor in a 401k got less than half of that. And this is net of fees. And the reason for that is the impact of switching fees and really the impact of the market's doing well. Well, I'm going to jump into the market. Ooh, the market looks scary now. I'm going to jump out of the market. That is huge. So what is the impact of decision making? And I find, you know, the counsel that I give to clients is let's come up with a strategy day one, and let's not make tactical changes unless the strategy changes or something bad happens with the fund manager, but don't chase last year's winner.
Absolutely. I totally agree with that. I mean, buy and hold, buy and hold. And it's interesting. There are some new and another development that has occurred over time in 401ks and 403bs, which is similar to a 401k, is the introduction of target date retirement funds, which you hold them for a long time, and over time, as you get older, they will gradually change the composition of your portfolio to offer a little less risk. And often that's a very good, they sort of do a lot of the work because we talk about rebalancing occasionally to make sure, you know, if you've grown a lot in 1 year, that you don't keep all of that, you know, you balance things out so you keep this, you keep on track with what you're talking about, with sort of a general theme to your portfolio. And these target date funds can do that for you. The only caveat is that sometimes these target date funds can be a little costly, and it may be better to, if your plan offers it, to try to find funds that do similar things to what's in the mix of the target date fund. Would you agree with that?
I would. I'm actually really glad you brought up target date funds, because another mistake we see people make is, you know, they're with a company 20 years, they make their investment allocation decision when they're 25 or 30, and 20 years later, their goals are very different, but they really haven't changed anything. And as you point out, target date funds do those changes for you. So I think it's been a good development. The next development I'd like to see with target date funds is to see the fees start to get lower. As you say, they can be expensive.
Right. But there are other things that people can do that, you know, a surprising number of people don't do, which is, we say in Consumer Reports, take the money, the free money, and run. You are in many, many 401k plans, you are offered a match by the employer, and it means that you have to contribute a minimum amount to get the full match. So, for example, if you put in 6% of your income each year, you can get a match in, you know, depending on what the company provides, you might get a match of 50% of that, so that's another 3% that goes directly into your account. It might be less than that, might be more, but that's free money. That is free money. That's like getting a 3% raise.
Well, I kidded people I worked with early in my career who said, I'm not going to take that because I don't want to tie up my money. And I'd look at them and go, wow, I had no idea you were that rich that you would give up, that you'd just burn $3,000 that was handed to you. I think a lot of people in the early years, at least, didn't understand what a 401k is. Well, we don't have a whole lot of time left, so let's talk about fixes. So you're stuck with your employer's choice of funds, and what if you don't like those choices? What if they all seem to be kind of high fee funds and maybe not a good balance of choices? What can you do if you're, you know, if you're the little guy?
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, the first thing is, you know, just to find, you know, the best of the worst. Index funds, as I said, are good. We recommend that people try, if you're given a match in company stock, try to get out of that as soon as you can, because it's not good. It's not a good idea at all to weight your portfolio with company stock, because you're putting a lot of eggs in one basket. Your job and your retirement then are both are both in the same basket.
Just ask people that worked at Enron, right?
Yeah.
Right. Exactly. So there are a good thing to do is to talk to your fiduciary. This is the person. There's usually one person who's sort of assigned this job in your company, and they're really supposed to be looking out for you, making sure that the right choices are there for you, and discuss some of your concerns. What there is, if you don't know who your fiduciary is, you can find it on this BrightScope website that I mentioned. You can find your company plan online, or you can just go to your human resources department and ask. Look at the expense ratios and lay in these various disclosures that I've mentioned, and show those to the fiduciary and ask. You might do some research. There's Morningstar is a very good place to do research. There are other places to find comparable funds that might be better offerings for your 401k. And basically, you're going to try to make an argument to the fiduciary. You know what? I'm getting hurt by this, and you're getting hurt by this. And maybe we can find some other options that work better for everyone.
And then I guess the other option is if you're in a big enough class of employees, employee groups are taking their employers to court now, which, you know, doesn't do much for your job security.
Right.
But in a big company like Walmart, they can be sued for not upholding their fiduciary duty.
Right. And, you know, this is becoming a bigger trend, and companies are taking note. Even if you were to say to your fiduciary, I have some concerns about my portfolio and whether I'm really, you're really providing the best costs for us, that alone these days might be enough to get the fiduciary and the other people who are working with the fiduciary scurrying around to find something better, because they read their professional journals, and they see that these lawsuits are coming up, people are winning them, and they don't have the cover that they used to have because of these new disclosures that are available to all 401k participants that give us a lot more muscle than we used to have. And my guess is that over the next few years, you will see more changes in 401k plans as employers scramble to improve things for their employees, basically to avoid lawsuits.
Well, Toby, on that point, we're going to wrap up the conversation. I think it's a really important topic. It's something that, you know, In my world, the topic comes up a lot because that's what I do professionally. But in most people's world, you know, 401ks, if they look at it once a year, they're probably doing well. So I think it's an important service that Consumer Reports did for your readers.
Yeah, and let me just interrupt because this is worth mentioning again just quickly. You start the article by talking about Jeff Gardner, this 58-year-old, and he says the market, by the late 90s, the market was earning 12%. On average, and in his 401k, he was earning 4.2% because he was getting all these fees thrown in, and that he estimated he's lost at least $100,000 of his nest egg because of these fees. So, absolutely, something we need to
watch. It's something you definitely want to look at. And Toby, just one last point. We talked about two things people can do if they don't have a good 401k. The third one is the 401k is not your only option. Right, you can just put the minimum in if you have a poor 401k to get the company match. And then there's other tax-deferred and taxable vehicles for you to use. For instance, an IRA. You could put some money in an IRA to still get that tax advantage. So, Toby, we thank you for your time this morning. Our guest is Toby Stranger. She's the senior editor for Consumer Reports. And in their September issue of the magazine, they had a article on how to help reduce your 401k fees. Toby, thank you for joining us this morning.
Thanks. It was a pleasure.
Thank you. And looking at the weather, boy, we are in to the changeable weather season. We're going to expect showers, not really today. It should be partly sunny with a high of 73. But the rest of this week, Doug, it's a chance of showers all through Friday, and a good chance, 40 to 50% chance of showers all through the week. So,
well, my lawn is loving it, Larry, but my mountain biking friends and I are not enjoying it so much.
Well, there's some mud out there, but yeah, you can shut your sprinklers off, save on your water bill now. I think we're getting toward the end of that. So, okay, we're going to have some fun with our next guest.
Yeah, our next guest is going to be Gene Magri, and he is the owner of Vintage Airstream Restoration. Airstream is in those trailers, those aluminum trailers, vacation trailers you see people driving. And we'll be back in a moment to talk with Gene. Stay tuned.
Hi, I'm Kelly from San Francisco Design, longtime supporter of KPCW. We provide a mix of European and mountain contemporary home furnishings for a unique Park City lifestyle. Our showrooms are in Park City and Salt Lake, and both offer complete design services. We're on the web at sanfrandesign.com.
Tune in to KPCW every Tuesday morning at 9 to hear This Green Earth.
We'll cover environmental issues from local to global, from snowpack to giant squid,
geothermal energy to gray wolves,
and honeybees to sustainable chocolate. Brought to you by Jones Waldo Holbrook and McDonough,
Republic Services,
Habitat for Humanities Restore,
and Rocky Mountain Power.
Welcome back to Mountain Money. We just spoke with Toby Stranger. She's the senior editor with Consumer Reports, and we talked about 401ks and how to save money. And now we've got Gene Magri in the studio, and he is the owner of Vintage Airstream Restoration, and he's going to tell us about fun ways we can spend our money. Welcome to the studio, Gene.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
So tell me about Airstream Restoration. What does your company do?
Well, what we're attempting to do in the Intermountain area is provide people with an opportunity to own a vintage Airstream trailer. Airstream started in 1931, and right now they're a very, very hot topic across America and really around the world. So we're doing whatever we can to help locate these iconic vintage pieces of aluminum, bring them to Heber, and offer them to the community.
And how do you find them, for starters? My dad had one. It was probably a 60s vintage. I sure wish I still had it. I'd be dragging it over to have you rehab it. But where do you find them to begin with?
Well, my wife and I get in the truck with a pair of field glasses, and we just go through all the little small towns throughout Utah, Wyoming, Colorado, and just look and look and look for that little shiny object in the middle of nowhere. And once we find it, we zero in on it. I approach the people that own it and see if that thing might be for sale. And what we find often is that these trailers have been sitting in the backyard or in the back of the ranch house for 20, 30, 40 years, just accumulating dust and tall, tall grass.
And are they deteriorating? I would think something neglected that long would be not worth restoring.
Well, most of them are deteriorated. People, when they abandon them for whatever reason, they don't travel anymore. People pass away. When they abandon them, they leave the windows open, the vents in the roof open, and the water gets in, and it eats away at the floors, and the mice come and eat the wires. So when I get them, They're a sad story. But that's the fun part of it, is just bringing them into our boneyard. We call it the boneyard. And they're all lined up there from the 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s. We stop at 1970, and people can come in and run through them and see if they have any indication of interest. And if they are, they do, then they can have one. They can buy one from us.
And they don't have to worry about any problems because they're completely restored. They're, I would imagine, very similar to how they came out of the factory day one.
Just the opposite. What my whole theory is there's so many folks today that are talented in carpentry and electrical and plumbing that I just want to bring the trailer to them and let them buy it in an as-is condition. Therefore, they're going to be owning the trailer for a heck of a lot less than if someone's gone out and restored it. I could never go out and buy my wife a pair of shoes because my foot's different than hers.
You're a wise man.
So what I attempt to do is to give them the option, once they like the trailer, they can take it and design it, or they can upgrade it themselves, or we can work hand-in-hand with them to get it back to a functional, safe condition.
And let's step back a little bit about the mystique of the Airstream, because you can't hardly name another vintage trailer manufacturer. And I know something of this subject. A guy named Wally Byam built them, and he was, what, an aeronautical engineer? So he worked with riveted aluminum in airplanes. And he took that concept to travel trailers and built these things like bricks. They're solid. They and because they're aluminum, you can shine them up and they'll look like they just came out of the showroom, even though they may be from the 30s or 40s or 50s.
Most of the trailers that we acquire have been oxidized over the years. One of the big mistakes that Airstream made back in the 40s and 50s is they put a clear coat over the brand new shiny aluminum, which locked in the oxidation process. So until you come to a group like us, we unlock that beautiful all-clad aluminum underneath by taking the clear coat off, and then 200 to 250 man-hours of polishing brings that back to a shiny mirror finish, which is the iconic part of what makes Airstream so recognized around the world.
And because they were using riveted aluminum, they were solid. These were well-built trailers.
These trailers don't go anywhere. They're riveted on the outside of the trailer with what they call an Olympic rivet, and they're riveted on the inside of the trailer with what they call a pop rivet. So it's built just like a house almost. You have interiors and exteriors, and it's amazing what some folks that are creative can do to these and to bring them back to life.
Yeah, we had a pop-up trailer when I was a kid, and we'd go into the campsites, and my dad, you know, you'd walk around the campsite once you get there. You know, we'd all envy the people in the Airstreams.
So the Airstreams, what do you have to do to them if they've been out in that field surrounded by grass for 30 years? Are you stripping them down to the frame and rewiring, replumbing, re-everything?
Well, that's a good question. What we attempt to do is to, once the person or the family that comes to us that's interested in one particular trailer, we give them an estimate on repairing, upgrading from the beginning. But the most important thing is we want to take a look at what hasn't been done for the last 20, 30, 40 years. And that mostly is axles, bearings, and brakes. Mm-hmm. So we're going to go through that trailer and make sure that it's safe for the person that purchases it to put it back on the road and not have to worry about it breaking down. The rest of the things that are inside the trailer on the outside of the trailer are aesthetic upgrades. So the wiring probably is going to have to be rewired. And we trace the wire from the front of the tongue all the way back to the back lights. The plumbing has to probably be upgraded and made into a safe environment for the national parks. We now have more stringent requirements to have gray tank water put in these Airstreams, whereas back in the 30s and 40s, there were no bathrooms whatsoever. So there's a lot of compliant issues that have to be maintained, and we can do whatever the budget of the person buying this trailer want to have done.
Well, give us an idea. What's kind of the low end? You know, if you're interested but you don't want to spend a lot of money, what's the low end of it? And what's the range that you've seen people spend on these?
Well, are we speaking about just the acquisition as the as-is trailer?
Both, as-is and then final.
Well, our as-is trailers, they started about $3,000 to $3,500 for an as-is trailer. Most people that see it are not going to be excited about it because it's not in good condition at all. But the vision of what we have right next to that trailer, one that has been restored and upgraded, I think is the excitement that gets people so interested in the possibility of bringing their trailer, their business theme, to us. It's a fun day for us every day.
And how about on the back end, full end? What would you say the range is?
Somewhere between $20,000 and $50,000.
Okay.
And how does that compare with retail? Go buy a brand new Airstream off the lot today.
Well, the new Airstreams, as one may know, are somewhere starting at $40,000, $60,000, $80,000, up to $150,000 to $200,000. Depending on what they're doing and what the individual wants. Many people buy them and then even upgrade the brand new trailer. But the amounts of money that people are budgeted for allows that person to develop a theme and certainly something that's iconic that should not, no guarantees of course, but should not lose a whole bunch of money. The Airstream trailer, as I see it today, if you look around and can make comparisons, you're going to find that most Airstreams are increasing in value. And there's not too many things in America today that are increasing in value.
Especially not things on wheels.
That's right.
Yeah, buy a truck and see how much it goes up in value next week.
Yeah, so give it. Have you worked on any that turned out really wild? Somebody who had a pretty far out idea and made it become reality?
Well, I'm still waiting for that person to come in that wants a tattoo parlor on wheels.
they can haul it out to Sturgis.
Right. Yeah, but we've done a whole bunch of them, and one of our last themes was a fabric store that was on wheels, and it came out just charming. The people would put the bolts of fabric in a cutting table and go to place to place to place and sell fabric. I find also that most of the people coming to us buying trailers are women, and they want to start their own business, get on the road, see America, and have fun.
Now, how difficult is it to pull an Airstream?
Well, we have some Airstreams that in 1941 there was an advertisement, and I have this trailer for sale right now in Heber. There was an advertisement in a magazine with a person on a bicycle pulling the Clipper Airstream trailer. And a lot of people have seen that absolute, but it's a very, very interesting piece of equipment that these guys built. So they started about 1,500 pounds, and they can work their way up to somewhere approaching 6,000-7,000, depending on what the interiors are.
So you don't necessarily, and you know, they're aerodynamic because they were designed by an aerospace engineer. Yeah. So they've got the rounded front and cut through the wind pretty good, I would imagine. So you don't need a Suburban or a big 2-ton truck to be yanking these around.
Many people come with a good V8 SUV or a small pickup truck, and that seems to be sufficient to pull the trailer around America.
Well, you know, Larry, it's always interesting when you find out about these businesses that are taking place here in Park City or Heber. So many things that you've shared with us today, Gene, were answers that I wasn't expecting at all. I would have thought you'd be selling nationwide, and it's mostly men. It turns out it's mostly women, and sounds like there's a big demand for people that want to base their business in a trailer, which wasn't even on my radar screen.
No.
So fascinating.
I hadn't thought of that.
Gene, thanks for joining us this morning.
Well, thanks for having me.
And we will be back to talk about Prudential Real Estate's partnership with Realty Track in just a minute.
Underwriting on KPCW is supported by Mountain West Bank in Park City, a community bank offering home financing service and guidance. Mountain West Bank is located near Kearns Boulevard next to the movie theater. More information at mountainwestbank.com. Division of Glacier Bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender.
Juniper Landing is proud to support our local radio station, KPCW. Juniper Landing is a new, whole ownership townhome community located at the base of Canyons Resort, adjacent to the Waldorf Astoria Park City, with a model open daily. Our website is juniperlandingparkcity.com.
This is Christian Bohr with the Park City Chamber Bureau. Joining the Chamber Bureau is a great investment for your business. Chamber Bureau members enjoy a wide array of benefits, including instant credibility, weekly newsletters with relevant information, educational seminars, webinars, and much more. Information on joining is online at visitparkcity.com or call us at 649-6100. The Park City Chamber Bureau is a nonprofit organization and a proud supporter of KPCW.
Fascinating conversation about Airstream trailers.
I'll say I'm ready to open my wallet.
Brought you back memories from your childhood, sounds like. I learned something new about you, Larry. I didn't know you grew up with an Airstream. We're going to switch gears and talk about real estate now. We've got Steve Roney and his son in the studio with us, and we've also got a guest on the phone. Prudential, just last month, Steve signed an agreement with Realty Track. Tell us what Realty Track is and why Prudential wants to work with them.
I'd be happy to do that. I think Jamie can describe it even better than I can. But from our vantage point, we went into this relationship because we're always looking for more tools and more information for our agents. And Realty Track has a great history of having provided that. They're a great source of data. And that data, of course, is a part of what we provide ultimately to our agents and they to their clients. So the better the data, the better the advice, and that's why we did it.
Very good.
So,
Jamie?
So it's information you get out of this. Information drilled a little deeper than you think your competition has.
You got it exactly right, Larry.
Okay. Let's bring Jamie into the conversation. This is Jamie Moyle on the phone with Realty Track. And Jamie, I understand your roots are Park City, although this is an Irvine, California company.
Can you hear me on this telephone?
Yes.
Yes.
You're
on.
No, okay. I just called in because I found a very beautiful blanket when you go
okay.
to the rail trail.
Can you call back at 649-9004?
9004. 649-9004. I got it. Thank you very much.
Okay. We thought that was Jamie Moyle, but we were expecting a male to answer the phone. So let's turn to Tom Roney and tell us a little bit more about Realty Track. What sorts of information is on the Realty Track database that is valuable to a customer of real estate?
They've done a great job of aggregating data from a lot of places, but it's pretty comprehensive and includes tax records, school information, environmental data, and data, market trends, and including weather-related information. It's really a kind of a one-stop shop for home information that is property-specific.
Okay. Well, now we have Jamie Moyle on the line. Right, Jamie?
Yes, sir. How are you today?
Very fine. We dialed up the phone and got a woman who'd found a rug. So now we have the right person with the right information. From your perspective, tell us about Realty Track and what it brings to a real estate firm like Prudential.
Well, Realty Track's been a housing authority for more than 10 years. As a result of that, we've got a lot of great media exposure and brand recognition. We have a lot of home buyers and sellers visiting our website. And we want to share that with the broker and by partnering.
So do you have anything that others don't have? I mean, there's Zillow and there's Redfin and there's a whole bunch of them out there that are crunching data.
And those guys do a great job of a lot of things. The way we think about it is their backbone is an aggregation of MLS data. And so an MLS date at its core is brochures on properties. Our core is the parcel level data. So we're aggregating 95 million individual properties, and our website aims to tell the story of everything that's happened with that property, what it sold for, transactions around it, building permits, etc.
This is kind of big data, right? Big data as it applies to real estate.
Yes, and you know, big data is it's a great buzzword these days, and we sell our data to a lot of insurance companies and banks and the government, all using that data to make good, important policy decisions. And we like to take that same data and give it to the consumers so they can make good investment decisions on their end.
Well, and Jamie, I went to your website, the consumer website, which is homefacts.com, and it was very interesting, and it had similar information. It had much of the same information that Zillow has, plus a whole bunch more. And the plus a whole bunch more was really quite interesting, like foreclosures in the Park City area, and what the estimate is for the amount that's owed on the bank loan, which for a consumer, for somebody looking for a house, that's really useful information. And it was just easy to use. It was very graphical. So it's big data, but I can tell you guys have put a lot of thought into how do we present it so that somebody that's not a real estate expert that wants to get a feel for a neighborhood that maybe they don't know, there's a lot of really interesting information. Where you're going to go to school, you can click on the icon of the school. It'll give you the test scores from the previous year. It was really quite cool.
Wow, so you can tell if you're buying into a neighborhood with a school that's overperforming or underperforming.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that's interesting.
And all those things have a lot of impact on the value of a home. School zones and elementary school attendance zones are really really important when someone's making a long-term investment decision.
Sure, I would imagine then you also overlay crime data, that sort of thing.
There was a list of people with criminal records that you'd want to know about in your neighborhood, and you could click on it. It's got a picture of the person and their name, which is good to know.
This is really
if you have kids.
This is not like just driving by a house saying, "I think I like this neighborhood," and making an offer.
No, you might also find an old meth lab next door.
Well, you wouldn't want to find that.
No, but that data is available.
And you definitely want to know that before you buy a house. So it's good that it's available somewhere in an easy-to-access place.
So Jamie, is you have a consumer site, but your model is to partner up with local real estate brokerages all across the country and do this on a fee basis? Is that the model?
So the model, we have two sites. We have RealtyTrack.com and HomeFacts.com. Between the two of them, we're seeing north of 3 million people a month to those sites. So our model is to provide consumers with more transparency and what we a term we call pre-diligence. They can do their research with us, and then our goal is to hand them off to a qualified top broker like Prudential Utah so that we can feel good about the customer experience, you know, from research all the way through transaction. And, we like to think of it as a nominal fee, and we're more concerned with the repeat business than we are with the fees we get from the broker.
So, Steve and Tom, it's a referral system for you. Are you seeing any referrals yet? You've just been associated for a month.
Just started, so we're feeling our way through all of this. That wasn't our primary reason for going into this. We again, back to what I said earlier, we're looking to enhance the data that we give our agents because that makes them smarter, gives them the ability to give better guidance to their clients. At the end of the day, this is still a relationship business. We know that. But buyers and sellers are looking for a lot of information, and to the extent we can be a one-stop shop for that information, that's what we want to do.
Well, let's talk about that because technology, there has been a lot of technology in an industry that for a long, long time was fairly low tech. As you say, it's primarily a relationship business. Do you see that need for technology increasing, or have we kind of gotten to where folks have the information they need now? What trends are you seeing there?
I would say most of the information is out there. The difficulty is that there's no sort of enterprise location to go find it. So our objective is to be that, where we our buyers and sellers of our clients, our agents, aren't having to search in four or five different places to, you know, to amalgamate data. We'd rather have, again, that one-stop shop. So technology, I think, it's a marathon. It's not a, there's no finish line. This stuff's going to continue in terms of its importance. End of the day, though, I still believe very strongly, and all the data would show, that it's still a relationship business. And we just want to make our make it easier for our agents and their clients.
And, Tom, what are your agents saying about it so far?
It's probably too early to say, Larry, just being a month into this. But I would say that as we're able to roll out the data on our public-facing website and with a deeper dive for our agents, that they're going to like it.
Okay. And Jamie, let's finish up with you. Are you still in I presume you're in a rapid growth mode now. You're not a mature business by any means at this point, are you?
Well, this company's been around for 17 years, and in some ways we're very mature. We have 200 plus people going out to get us a lot of great data, and so we're good at that. We're mature at that. But yeah, we're in hyper growth. We want to do a lot of new things. We want to empower the customers in a different way. Home buyers have had a rough half decade, and they need to look at property buying more like an investment, more like a 401k than they have in the past, and they're demanding that. So we're taking our data and we're taking the mature side of that business and trying to apply it in new ways.
Okay, Jamie, and you have some Park City roots, it sounds like.
I do. I live in Park City. I work out in Orange County at the Realty Track headquarters most of the week, but I do get to come home on weekends.
Very fine.
Well, you're here for the best part of the week, right?
It's certainly my favorite
except,
part.
Except the last two weekends, it's really been unfair, right? Because it's rained on the weekend, and then you wake up Monday morning, and it's sunny.
You know, even when it rains in Park City, it's still pretty.
That's a good slogan for us.
Well, we could have a week of pretty then. Because
we got a whole lot of pretty in front of us.
We're expecting a lot of rain this week. Well, let's wrap things up just quickly. Steve, how many agents are you up to by now?
We have 411 agents.
411
yeah,
agents.
Now, they're not all Park City. As you probably know, we run from Ogden all the way through the southern part of Salt Lake County. So lots of offices. We have about 20 offices. Many of them are smaller. We've got a lot of hub and spoke type offices and little offices and lodges and
sure.
hotels and what have you, but pretty big operation.
Okay, well, thanks for joining us, Jamie Moyle on the phone, a Parkite who's working at Realty Track in California, and Tom and Steve Roney from Prudential here. And we will be back to wrap up Mountain Money after this.
Additional funding for programming on KPCW has been provided by Long Reimer Weiniger Bepler, Estate Planning, Family Law, LRW-LAW.com. Park City Nursery. For 30 years, we know what grows. ParkCityNursery.com. VaultHomeLoans.com. Purchase and refinance mortgages. Conventional FHA and VA, 801-201-3484. The Corporation for Public Broadcasting and listeners like you.
And welcome back to Mountain Money. Well, important topics like real estate data and
savings.
And saving for your retirement.
And then fun topics Airstreams.
But the one I just love from today is Vintage Airstream Restorations. They're located in Heber City, and that's the name of the website, Vintage Airstream Restorations.com. And
I think there's a visit down there for you, Larry.
I just am enamored by these and have been since my dad dragged one home many, many decades ago.
I've always liked them when I was a kid, from the time I was a kid as well.
They're just cool looking.
They are.
Yeah. Well, we want to thank our guests for coming in this morning, and they include Tom and Steve Roney and Jamie Moyle from Realty Track, and also want to thank Toby Stanger from Consumer Reports Magazine and Gene Magri from the Airstream Company. Also, I better thank our great sponsors, which include Prudential, the Ronies there, also Mountain West Bank, San Francisco Design, the Park City Chamber, Park City Realty Group. And this week, we want to welcome a new sponsor, Iron Mountain Group, to the lineup. And we'll be talking with the folks behind Iron Mountain Group next week.
Excellent.
Well, very fine. Thanks for joining us. This has been Mountain Money, only in Park City, only on KPCW. It's KPCW Park City.